Welcome back. This is Latter-day Radio on World Class Talk, KLO 1430. I'm Martin Tanner, responding to some of the comments of our guest, Jonathan Neville, someone whom I consider friend and with whom I have had a number of discussions, and I have a great deal of respect for Jonathan. So my comments here are my own opinions. He and I have different points of view about the Book of Mormon locations. He has talked a great deal about Letter 7, which is a letter that Oliver Cowdery wrote expressing his belief that the hill in upstate New York by where Joseph Smith grew up is the actual hill where the final battles described in the Book of Mormon took place. Now, the issue that I have with that is that Oliver Cowdery has his belief and opinion, as do many other general authorities who differ with him, and none of those ideas or beliefs of Oliver Cowdery or other general authorities are based on any kind of a claimed revelation. And so their opinions, although fascinating, to me, don't carry as much weight as the text of the Book of Mormon. Let me give you a few examples. Frederick G. Williams was one of the early general authorities of the church, and he stated in writing that Joseph Smith told him that Lehi and his party landed in South America, in Chile, on 30 degrees south latitude. He, at another time, claimed that an angel had appeared to him and backed up that statement that Lehi and his party landed not in North America, Florida, or anywhere like that, but in Chile, on the western coast of South America. Well, I personally don't think that's revelation either. I think that's Frederick G. Williams' opinions about where it happened, with which I disagree, and with which Oliver Cowdery disagrees, and with which Jonathan Neville disagrees. But that's what Frederick Williams said. John Taylor and Wilford Woodruff, when they wrote in the Times and Seasons, said something different from Oliver Cowdery's Letter 7, and also different from Frederick G. Williams' comment. In the Times and Seasons of September 15th of 1842, they said, quote, Lehi landed a little south of the Isthmus of Darien, which is where Panama is today. I think they landed a little farther northwest. So I think John Taylor and Wilford Woodruff were wrong. Jonathan Neville certainly thinks they were wrong. Oliver Cowdery would think they were wrong. And so would Frederick G. Williams. And so I disagree with John Taylor and Wilford Woodruff. That's okay. They all have their opinions. There are other comments that were made in the Times and Seasons that I won't go through. Orson Pratt had an interesting comment where he thinks that the Lamanites and the Nephites, landed in Central America, closer to a place where I think they landed, Yucatan Peninsula. I think a very accurate comment on this subject was made by George Q. Cannon, who in 1890 in a church publication said, quote, there's a tendency strongly manifested among some of the brethren to study the geography of the Book of Mormon. Hey, sounds like today. The brethren who lecture on the lands of the Nephites have often been asked to prepare a suggestive map illustrative of Nephite geography, but have never consented to do so, nor are we acquainted with any of the 12 apostles who would undertake such a task. The reason is that without further information, they are not prepared to even suggest a map, close quote. Why would that be? Well, there's no revelation on the subject. Member of the First Presidency, Antony Ivins, in 1929, made a similar comment about the Book of Mormon geography. Quote, where was the city of Zarahemla and other geographic matters? It does not make any difference to us. There has never been anything yet set forth that definitely settles the question. Close quote. 1938, President Joseph F. Smith said that he had been asked to approve a map showing the exact landing place of Lehi and his company, but he had declined because, quote, the Lord had not yet revealed it, close quote. That is a wise statement. There are no specific revelations that state where the Book of Mormon events actually occurred, and because of that, Letter 7, although fascinating to me, is nothing that's authoritative on the subject. Another issue that was brought up is the final battle and the idea of only one Cumorah. Well, I believe the final battles happened in Mesoamerica, and archaeologists, anthropologists, and scholars who are not Latter-day Saints would tell you, based on the excavations that have happened there, that the warriors and their battle accoutrements, the things that they wore and the kinds of warfare that they conducted, including head plates, body plates, scimitars, and other kinds of weaponry, are consistent with those described in the Book of Mormon. And there was the population base in approximately 600 AD of 15 to 20 million people, which would support the numbers in the final battles described there. That's persuasive to me. There are no head plates, scimitars, breastplates, and no population large enough in North America, even remotely close to the time when the final battles took place, to support anything described in the Book of Mormon. For that reason, at least at this point in time, the Heartland theory is not persuasive to me about where the final battles would take place. And so how could you have a Hill Cumorah in Central America and then the plates be removed from the hill in North America? The short answer is that from the time of the final battles till the time when the plates were deposited in the hill, we have, according to the text of the Book of Mormon itself, 38 years, which is plenty of time for Moroni to bring the plates from Mesoamerica to North America. I could go on and on about different details in the Book of Mormon which are persuasive to me about Central America. Maybe just one last big one would be cement cities, as described in Helaman chapter 3. There's nothing like that in North America, but there are several cement cities, the most impressive, which is El Mirador, that are the right time and location in Mesoamerica. So that would be a brief summary, and I'm sure we'll have more discussions later on about the contents of the Book of Mormon text itself, about statements of other people, and about where events in the Book of Mormon actually took place.
Thank you, Martin. I'm Greg Girard. I'm here with Martin Tanner. And if you just tuned in, you're listening to Latter-day Radio. One thing you can see about my friend Martin here, he's like a Boy Scout. He's always prepared. When foes of the church come to town, if they knew ahead of time they'd have to face Martin Tanner, they would be well advised to reconsider and try to reschedule. I know I would. But then I find Jonathan's arguments very, very persuasive, Martin, and I find it very hard to second-guess Oliver Cowdery, who was there with the prophet, after all, from the very beginning, being ordained and even taught by angels. You can expect more on this subject, the subject of Book of Mormon lands, in the weeks and months to come. Jonathan Neville will return, Rod Meldrum will be back, and if he makes it into town, we'd love to have a chat with Wayne May from Northern Wisconsin. Heartlanders all. In the other segments later today, we'll discuss with a couple of guests, my friend Don Gull, my neighbor and friend Don Gull, and the Firths, Rex and Kathy, who we heard from last week, a subject that's near and dear to my heart, and that's senior missionary work. I mentioned earlier that my wife and I returned from the Frankfurt, Germany mission in October of 2016, and then last year spent 3 months in Switzerland on a special assignment working on human rights. We met some marvelous, well-seasoned couples who left children and grandchildren, sacrificed time and treasure to support the missionary effort far away from home. For the senior sisters who were cooking meals, going to church and shopping in faraway lands, listening to a foreign language, it wasn't easy, but we all learned to love the work, the saints and particularly the young missionaries. So if you're getting close to that age where a senior mission is possibly looming on the horizon, take a look at a new website the church has set up. It's seniormissionary.lds.org. Go through it. Study it. We'll talk some more about it later in the hour. And then next week, we'll tackle a tender subject, young people who are losing their faith and leaving the church. These aren't just run-of-the-mill people either. These are young people who were raised in strong homes, who went to seminary, who went on missions, who got married in the temple. So what are the causes? We're going to talk about those. What are the indicators? What are the issues? And most importantly, what can we do about it? We'll address them head on, no holds barred. We'll also look at the traditional issues on this subject that Jesus himself brought up in the Gospels, namely in Luke 15, the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the prodigal son. But we'll also examine some modern issues and the half-truths being spread about on the internet regarding such topics as the Book of Abraham, grammar errors and corrections in early editions of the Book of Mormon, and Joseph Smith's so-called ceilings to other men's wives. Then on the 29th, Martin Tanner will pose the question, is the Constitution hanging by a thread? He found that elusive quote, the one that people have been quoting all these years, so you need to come back and learn what he dug out of his extensive archives. So stick around. Latter Day Radio will be back in a few minutes, right here on 1430 KLO World Class Talk. We'll try to make it worth your while.